Welcome to the Nevada Court of Appeals. This is our session here today. We only have one case. We're appearing by video. The three judges are present in Las Vegas. And to my right is Judge Jerry Tao. And hopefully, counsel, you can hear us all right and you can see us. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Your Honor.
And to my left is Judge Bonnie Bulla. And we welcome both of you. This is Joel Durst versus Silver State Cultivation, LLC, case number 81393-COA. We're wearing masks because we have people in the courtroom and we're sitting near each other and we're in Las Vegas and unfortunately the pandemic is continuing. We had the prescience to order this hearing by video. So fortunately, counsel doesn't have to be here. You can be wherever you want, as long as you can see and hear us. Our technology has worked well for the past almost 2 years now. It goes back to May of 2020 since we started oral arguments remotely. There is a technical problem to stop. We'll try and deal with it. But we're very happy that we can proceed on this case. We have a lot of workers' compensation cases, and I can't remember us ever setting oral argument on one of them. So, you guys are a first. Thank you. Judge Tao, do you have any opening comments?
No, just thank both of you for accommodating us and doing argument this way. I know that that involves an extra step for you guys because you have to work with our IT guys and do like practice runs and make sure all the technology is working. And I know that's, you know, kind of a just an extra thing that we wouldn't ordinarily have to do, but, you know, we're unfortunately still in this pandemic and this is how we have to do things and we appreciate it and we're looking forward to a good argument.
Thank you. Judge Bulla, do you have any opening comments?
Good morning. As you know, we do have our masks on so you can't see our facial expressions. We are going to do our very best not to interrupt you or to make this as easy on both of you as possible. But if there are any concerns, please let us know and thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. I see in the video here, Mr. Santos for the appellant, Mr. Durst, and Mr. Lavery for the respondent, Silver State Cultivation. Mr. Santos, you'll go first. You have 15 minutes. Do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I reserve 5 minutes, please, for rebuttal.
Okay, 5 minutes. And of course, you'll see it on the screen. And a red light will also go off. That doesn't mean you have to stop because the light goes off, but it's your warning that your time is ticking away and your rebuttal will be reduced.
Yes, sir.
So, Mr. Santos, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Judge Gibbons, Judge Bulla, Judge Tao, may it please the court, Joel Santos on behalf of the injured worker, Joel Durst, who is also present to observe socially distance in the far background. This industrial injury stems from a dangerous situation which occurred back on March 8th of 2019. The injured worker, his supervisor, his female co-employee, in fact, all the employees and customers that were in the employer's building were placed in an explosive situation when a violent customer came into the employer's establishment. Customer was rude, aggressive, loud to the female co-employee. In fact, a co-employee stated in his police report that he was even throwing items. Eventually, as both the co-employee and the supervisor were unable to calm the gentleman down, he was asked to leave the employer's establishment. The injured worker decided to help his supervisor by trying to walk the person out of the employer store with the supervisor. So this was helping his supervisor, Mr. Durst testified, was part of his work duties, as well as making sure everyone was safe. His supervisor, I will point out, never told him not to help him. And in fact, the supervisor in his police statement stated that by the time Joel has made his way onto the sales floor, I then proceeded to head to the sales floor so that we could escort him out of the building. And then the supervisor also said, while I was trying to call the police, we were working him toward the exit, and that's Appendix 1, Appendix Volume 1, page 216. Now, the appeals officer that heard this matter, Your Honors, were the appeals officer was held up on the idea of why did the injured worker get involved? He was not hired as a security officer. Whether the injured worker was at fault or negligent in helping his supervisor to defuse a dangerous situation is not relevant and should never have been considered by the appeals officer because of the fact that it's well-established Nevada's workers' comp system is a no-fault system. NRS 616A.030 provides that an accident means an unexpected, unforeseen event happening suddenly and violently with or without human fault and producing at the time objective symptoms of an injury. Therefore, if we look at this case and say, well, did the injured worker execute poor judgment by putting himself in danger while he was trying to protect someone else? Or was he negligent in doing that? Or was he under a mistaken belief that this guy was going, this out-of-control customer is turning around to hit his supervisor, to slug him? Even if he was, and this is just for argument's sake, under a mistaken belief that this could occur, that doesn't matter because of the fact that that does not take it out of the definition of an accident under NRS 616A.030 because it's a no-fault system and we don't look at the negligence of the injured worker nor of the employer even. So there's not much case law on this particular issue because the statute is very clear that Nevada is a no-fault system, which was confused by the appeals officer. The Nevada Supreme Court has held that to fix a degree of negligence is not necessary. If the occurrence was an accident as defined, compensation under the Act would follow whether the event was, quote, with or without human fault, end quote. And that's Kinetic Copper Corporation versus Hayes. And in that particular case, the employer knew that eventually there would be a slide occurring at an open pit, which eventually did happen. However, the Supreme Court stated that we may assume further that the continuance of work under the circumstances was negligent on the part of the appellant, meaning the employer. To fix a degree of negligence is not necessary. If the occurrence was an accident, then it doesn't matter because this is a no-fault system.
Mr. Santos, let me ask you a question.
Yes,
is it your position that the appeals officer did not address the risks associated with the situation? In other words, did not define what type of risk Mr. Durst faced?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that the appeals officer failed to analyze that, and that was when the appeals officer failed to look at the Phillips case. And in the Phillips case, we have three different types of risks that are involved, and that's first is the solely employment related, and then the second is the purely personal, and then the third is the neutral. And it's our position that the appeals officer failed to look into that, and as a result, there was an error of law because of the fact that the appeals officer did not properly look at apply NRS 616C.150 subsection 1, which deals with arising out of and in the course of your employment in order to have your claim accepted. And in looking at those, if the appeals officer had looked at those, which the district court did look at, however, I with all due respect to district court, I felt that they also did the review incorrectly. The district court noted that, you know, that did not occur. However, if we look at those three risks under the Phillips case, purely personal, that one can be kicked out immediately because of the fact that the court has defined that as so clearly personal that even if it take effect while the employee is on the job, they could not possibly be attributed to the employment. So that one definitely would not apply. It's our position that it would solely employment related would apply, because those are injuries that are the kinds of injuries that one thinks of at once as industrial injuries are generally compensable. And the court had mentioned tripping on a defect at the employer's premises or falling on uneven or slippery ground at the work site. And the reason that we feel that it would be solely employment is when we look at the facts, everything was related to the employment. If we look at the fact that the occurrence happened in the premises, it dealt with an unruly customer who was swearing, using foul language, who was becoming rude and more and more loud, and the customer was not concerned about something outside of the work environment. The customer was concerned about the way that the product was displayed, and he was not happy with the product that was being offered by the employer. The supervisor was trying to get him out of the premises, and Mr. Durst was assisting the supervisor, which the supervisor did not tell him not to help him out, therefore consenting to him helping him remove this gentleman. And I would note that, you know, there is no security at this premises, and the employer has stated in their documents that increasing violence in society in general, and specific to the marijuana industry. And that's Appendix 1, Volume 1, page 223. Everything that occurred with regards to this was 100% employment related. That's why we feel it would be the solely employment related. If we looked at the neutral, if it was a neutral for argument's sake, then we would use the increased risk test. And there, if there was an increased risk, then it would be compensable. And it's our position that there was, because number one, it happened on the employer's premises. The altercation was due to work-related issues only. The injured worker was performing his job by assisting his supervisor. And the only one who benefited from this incident was the employer, because of the fact that a potentially explosive and dangerous situation was diffused. There was no, we do know that there was, when there was four people that dragged this gentleman out of their establishment, we note that there was a knife that was recovered. It was not pulled out during the walking out of the employee. However, it was noticed after the altercation. And at this time, Your Honors, I'd like to, if I've answered your question, Judge Bula, I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Santos.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and put that at 5 minutes, since you stopped arguing at that point. Thank you, Mr. Santos. Mr. Laver, you may proceed on behalf of Silver State.
Thank you, Your Honor. Judge John Laver, on behalf of the respondents. That was a very liberal interpretation of the factual scenario that forms the basis for this appeal. We need to go back and look at the record, and of course this court is confined by the record. I'm getting a bunch of feedback. Is that occurring on your end as well?
Can you mute that, Mr. Santos?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Judge, can you hear me?
Yes.
Is it better?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
All right. Thank you, Judge. When you look at the factual scenario that led up to this, the representations that have been made today and during the course of the pleadings are not consistent with the record as found by the trier of fact. And, of course, as a matter of law, if a reasonable mind could come to the conclusion that the trier of fact did, it's sustainable as a matter of law. In this particular instance, the respondent took it upon himself to interject himself into a scenario that he was not a part of. He was not coming to the defense of someone. In fact, the record was clear, and the trier of fact specifically found that the scenario under which these events took place were predicated on an individual having a heated discussion with a supervisor within the store. There was no physical altercation whatsoever until that supervisor made physical contact with the customer. So the scenario under which these circumstances took place are such that, one, the respondent had no security or customer protection aspects to his job. That's undisputed. He testified to that during the course of the appeals hearing. He then chose to come around the counter and attack, and he was charged with a crime of battery by attacking the customer. This is not, the customer didn't attack the supervisor. The supervisor made physical contact with the customer. The customer drew away. The respondent actually testified in front of the department administration that his conduct, he believed that his conduct was appropriate because the customer would now be dealing with two employees instead of one. So he chose to escalate.
Mr. Lavery?
Yes, sir.
If I may interject, the video from the store is included in the record on appeal.
Yes, sir.
So we're able to look at that. And it's, you know, it's one of those situations where the video often speaks for itself. And you
yes,
can
sir.
Correct me if I'm wrong or if the appeals officer said something different. But my view of the video showed that there was a conversation. Then the supervisor was there. Then two people were there talking to the customer. They tried to escort him out of the store. The customer seemed to stop or pause. There was a brief contact with the supervisor. They started walking again. The supervisor shoved him in the back, the customer, and that the customer started to react to being shoved. And then Mr. Durst intervened and grabbed him, put him in the bear hug. They were up against the wall. Then the customer kicked off of the portion of the wall that was sticking out, forcing the Mr. Durst backwards, falling on his back, and he was immediately injured. So it appeared to me from looking at that the last person of the three to have any contact was Mr. Durst. Now, again, you could correct me if you saw it differently or the appeals officer did, but that's what I saw.
Now, what the findings are.
And then one other thing, as far as I can tell from the record, there's nothing in there indicating that Mr. Durst was actually charged with the crime. There's a police report recommending a charge, but nothing showing that he was charged. He was tried. He was found guilty. If he appealed, nothing whatsoever, just that there's a police report recommending a charge.
I believe the record supports the fact that he was actually charged, but frankly, it's of no great import, I believe, for purposes of addressing the issue before the court. The question becomes one of whether or not the respondent was acting within the course and scope of his employment. He is not a security officer. He is not responsible. In fact, as the record clearly indicates, there is a policy of requesting intervention by law enforcement if there is a disruption within the place of business. It is not incumbent
upon the
respondent. Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry. Let me interrupt just a moment. I mean, the supervisor didn't follow that policy either, did he?
No, ma'am. He did not.
Okay.
But I'm sorry, Judge.
No, go ahead. Please continue.
No, I was going to say that doesn't then by somehow bring his conduct or respondent's conduct within the course and scope of their employment.
But don't you think under the Phillips case, though, that the appeals officer should have at least analyzed the risk that the employee faced as the important first step to determine if the employee's injury arose out of the employment?
The appeals officer, when he rendered his decision, went through the analysis not only in Gorski. He addressed the Phillips case. He did not specifically, the district court, in rendering its decision, went through a greater analysis of the Phillips case than did the appeals officer in terms of articulating it in the decision and order. Nonetheless,
but the district court looks at the appeals officer's decision de novo.
Correct.
So the appeals officer is the one that we're somewhat concerned about right now,
right.
Which is, did the appeals officer actually ever define the risk that was faced by the employee in analyzing the situation?
Of the three separate tests set forth in the Phillips case, the appeals officer did not, in the decision itself, specifically address the three separate tests that are required. They did not set, he did not specifically address the increased risk, the personal risk, the mixed risk. He did not do that.
Would you also perhaps agree that the totality of the circumstances must be analyzed in making the decision as to whether an injury arose out of an employee's employment?
And that's where I think the appeals officer did satisfy his duty in doing so. He went through the entire analysis, and while he may not have articulated the specific test under Phillips, he nonetheless took the totality of the circumstances, the respondent's conduct, the status of his employment, the circumstances, the review of the video, and come to a conclusion that the respondent was not acting within the course and scope of his employment at the time.
Did he take into account the supervisor's conduct?
I'm sorry?
Did he take into account the supervisor's conduct?
Yes, ma'am.
In what way?
That was part of the argument that was made before him on the record. It was the totality of the circumstances.
What conduct did he account for?
Again, we went through the entire factual scenario as to how these circumstances came into being. In other words, we went through the video examination or the video evidence and respondent's testimony in terms of how this set of circumstances began, in other words, from how the customer's interaction began with the supervisor, the supervisor's conduct, the resulting set of circumstances that led to then the respondent interjecting himself into this factual scenario and the resulting injury that came about because of his intervention. So we went through it from beginning to end with respect to what transpired. So we addressed not only the respondent's conduct, but the supervisor's conduct as well. The supervisor obviously wasn't alleging an industrial injury, and so his conduct is not necessarily addressed for purposes of the resulting injury to the respondent, but his conduct was addressed for purposes of argument and review of the record when it was done at the time that the hearing was conducted in front of the appeals officer.
Do you believe that the supervisor might have increased the risk to Mr. Durst by physically pushing the customer?
No.
And why not?
Because his conduct stands by itself. In other words, you have to view it in the light of the respondent's obligation or lack of obligation to intercede in an event, even if one were to occur. If the respondent were acting in some form of a security fashion for this particular entity, and the respondent or the supervisor had conducted himself in the fashion that he did, it's arguable that you're placing somebody who has a duty to come and intercede in that position. In this particular case, the respondent took it upon himself to intercede in something that he was not requested to be part of. The policies of the company specifically spoke against interceding in an event, and in fact gave specific instruction that if an event were to occur, law enforcement was to be contacted. So the supervisor's conduct doesn't place the respondent at any greater risk. And again, when you go through the video and you look at the factual findings that were made by the appeals officer, by the trier of fact, you'll see that there's no indication that respondent had any obligation, moral or otherwise, to intercede in these events. And in fact, it was specifically found that he escalated the situation by interceding, not diffusing it, as was represented to you.
So, Mr. Lavery, would an employer want violence to happen? Could an employee intervene to try to stop violence? Let's say the circumstances were more aggravated here and the customer actually pulled out a knife. Are the employees just supposed to let that happen? And let's say he was trying to stab the supervisor. Are you supposed to let it happen? The appeals officer said, well, he didn't defend the third party, that he didn't have a good reason to defend the third party. So he was wrong. Well, let's assume the appeals officer is right about that. But are we supposed to try to stop employees? They just have to stand back and let it happen and call the police. And, you know, 5 minutes later when the police arrive and the guy's dying on the floor with a knife wound, I mean, is that the policy you're advocating?
No, I'm not at all. But I am advocating the fact that under the scenario that's present before this court, the scenario was escalated by the respondent, not by the conduct of the customer. It was increased by the respondent's conduct. If you want to change the factual scenario as we go along, certainly coming to the aid of another individual, and I can speak to this with some level of authority,
my point is the appeals officer could have been right on his finding. I mean, he heard all the evidence and concluded that Mr. Durst should not have intervened, but it's not necessarily a black and white situation. I mean, do you look at the good faith of the person who intervened? He wasn't acting for personal benefit. He was trying to protect the supervisor. The supervisor stupidly shoved the customer. The customer is going to react, at least Mr. Durst's mind is, and so the customer's already out of control. And he's trying to stop it from getting worse. I mean, so he appears to be acting in good faith. Even if he should not have intervened under all other circumstances, he wasn't acting in bad faith or outside of the general scope of his employment because he was trying to prevent violence.
Well, I respectfully disagree with some of that, Judge, from the simple standpoint that he chose to intercede and escalate the situation. He did not defuse the situation. The situation was, and that was made as a finding of fact by the trier of fact, and there's substantial evidence on the record to support that.
Right, so, but the question is not whether it was actually accurate that he should not have intervened, and for right now we're going to defer to the appeals officers on that. That is true. We're going to defer. However, should the appeals officer have considered the good faith of Mr. Durst when he did? Because the appeals officer made a finding that Mr. Durst thought that he needed to intervene wrongly, but that's what he was thinking at that moment in time, and that's why he intervened. He wasn't intervening for a personal reason, but for a reason to protect the business and the supervisor.
Well, by that analysis, Judge, then the appeals officer did address and consider exactly what you just asked me.
Good faith?
Absolutely.
Mr. Lavery, would you agree,
yes,
or did the appeals officer address the workplace environment, namely that Mr. Durst was at and working at a cannabis dispensary? Did the appeals officer address that at all?
Of course, that was abundantly clear to all involved that he was working in the dispensary. I don't think any of that's
an excuse. The appeals officer addressed the workplace environment in determining the risk factors.
Yes,
for
ma'am.
Mr. Durst.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I don't recall that in the record.
I don't recall it either. Mr. Lavery, do you have a cite for us on that?
To the record itself, no, I do not.
Okay.
I quite frankly didn't anticipate that being a question or an issue, to be perfectly candid with you.
Right. So that's an interesting point. Mr. Santos mentioned it in his argument. Maybe you'll be able to point us to where it is in the record, Mr. Santos, on your rebuttal, or if it's not in the record, whatever the case may be, but you did bring that up. So thank you very much, Mr. Lavery. And Mr. Santos, you do have 5 minutes. to conclude the argument today.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I'd point out, Your Honor, that the insurer's argument would result in absurd results because of the fact that if we look at this particular case, number one, it's a no-fault system. So, we're thinking that if Mr. Durst was under the mistaken belief that the guy was going to turn around and punch him, it doesn't matter because it's a no-fault system. In addition, if, as Your Honor has already looked at the videos, it clearly shows that the gentleman was turning after the supervisor had decided to push him in the back. So if we do Monday morning quarterbacking on all of these workers' comp claims, then we could always find excuses to deny them. However, I'd point out in the Woods case, Woods versus Safeway, in that particular case, the unfortunate female injured worker was sexually assaulted twice. So my question is, if one of the store clerks had gone outside to throw something in the trash and they saw one of the sexual assaults beginning to occur, at what point does an injured worker say, I'm not hired as a security guard officially, however, I need to intervene to protect my co-employee, protect that person? Are we going to just have that employee just stand there and witness this horrific attack on another co-employee? Or are we going to say, you know what, if you choose to assist in an emergency situation like that, then if you get injured, it will be covered under workers' comp and you're not going to be punished for it.
Well, Mr. Santos, that's kind of the scenario I was alluding to, but Mr. Lavrio points out that the finding from the appeals officer was that Mr. Durst should not have intervened, that they escalated the situation.
Yes, Your Honor, and if I could address that, if we look at the findings of fact that the appeals officer made and also used some of them in very little of them in the conclusions of law, we have to be able to take that and go back to the record on appeal so there's support to that specific finding of fact. And that's one of the problems that I have in this particular case, Your Honor, is that if we look at some of the findings that the appeals officer made, they're not supported by the evidence that was before him. Number one, the finding that the injured worker escalated the situations. The situation. This was not supported by the evidence. Prior to the bear hug where Mr. Durst was protecting his supervisor, right before that was the supervisor pushing him in the back, physical altercation. Right before that was the customer turning and shoulder checking the supervisor. The customer was also throwing items. And that's in one of the police reports by one of the co-employees, Appendix Volume 1, pages 212 to 214. So I think it was not even a long shot, but it was not even a stretch. It was impossible for the appeals officer to conclude that Mr. Durst was the aggressor in this. Another example is the appeals officer found that the injured worker was charged with simple battery, and that's being argued by counsel today. However, there was no evidence that he was charged with anything. The appeals officer even stated during the hearing that there was no indication that the city attorney ever acted on the charges against the injured worker. And that's Appendix Volume 1, page 97, lines 16 through 17. The appeals officer also found that the customer was not charged with the crime for the incident. Again, there was no evidence or testimony to support this finding. In fact, this also contradicted the appeals officer's own statement during the hearing that there was no evidence that charges were filed against the customer. That's Appendix Volume 1, page 97, lines 16 to 23. So if the appeals officer decision lacks substantial evidentiary support, the decision is unsustainable as being arbitrary or capricious, and that's NRS 233B.135, subsection 3, subsection F, and also Barrett Goldstrike Mine versus Todd Peterson, 116 Nevada 541. And I see I have 3 seconds left. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay. Mr. Santos, do you have an answer to the question that was posed at the end of Mr. Lavery's argument about whether there's evidence in the record that cannabis dispensaries are more prone or to violence, or is there nothing in the record about that?
I think there is, Your Honor. In first, Mr. Durst had testified that he had been to other distilleries, and this was the first where he had seen that there were no security guards. And that's that is on Appendix Volume 1, page 59. Also, it's contained on the employer's own statement, which is their company policy, which we had objected to as being just the one-page document and nothing in addition to that. It also lacked foundation. However, that's on Volume 1, page 223. And the very first sentence, the employer states, Silver State Relief is committed to preventing workplace violence and maintaining a safe work environment. Given the increasing violence in society in general and specific to the marijuana industry, Silver State Relief has adopted the following guidelines to deal with intimidation, harassment, and other threats of violence that may occur on the premises.
Okay. All right. I think you've addressed that, Mr. Santos, then. Mr. Lavery, was there anything that Mr. Santos said in response to my question that is inaccurate from your knowledge, just the factual what's in the record?
No, sir, I don't believe it's factually inaccurate. I just don't believe that it necessarily addresses the issue that's been raised by your question.
Okay.
I believe my question was whether or not the appeals officer actually looked at the nature of the workplace environment, specifically that that Mr. Durst was in a cannabis dispensary or working in that type of a workplace environment when reaching the decision that was made.
Your Honor, and I'm doing this solely from memory based upon the argument that was made. The arguments were made with respect to the environment and where this took place. I don't believe there was any further analysis or discussion beyond that.
Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. Thank both of you, counsel. Excellent work by both. As I mentioned, it's unusual for us to set a workers' comp case for oral argument, and I can't remember having a case involving a dispensary either. You know, I knew they were coming sooner or later, but here we are now. So we're trying to flesh that out because that's a interesting topic. What does it mean if there is more prone to violence? You have to address that as an appeals officer, as a fact finder. So we'll debate that point, see if it matters, and we'll take this matter under submission and have a written decision in the near future.
Thank you, Your Honors.
All right.
Thank you to each of you.
Okay, thank you, and maybe we'll see you again this year in person rather than by video.
Hopefully so.
Nice.
All right. Judd Todd, do you have any concluding comment?
No, just to thank both of you. It's a good argument, interesting issue, and thanks again for working with us and to get through this and do things this way. But this was helpful.
Thank you, Judge.
And Judge Bullitt.
Thank you both so much and for bearing with our questions and not necessarily being able to read our facial expressions. And we really do appreciate the hard work that you both obviously put into the case. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you again. The court will be in recess.
Have a good afternoon. Thank you.